Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good morning. This is Doug Field, the CEO of the Institute of Healthcare Consumerism Radio, and welcome to this week's edition of Healthcare Consumerism Radio. And joining me in studio today is our producer, Jonathan Field. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning.
I got a nice cloudy day here in Atlanta. Hopefully going to be a good weekend here and across the country. So welcome to all our listeners out there. Glad to have you with us today. We've got a good program today. We're going to really focus on financial well-being and financial wellness, that new emerging part of an integrated health management strategy and new benefit, really, financial wellness. And, you know, to lead this discussion today, our first guest will be Keith Roberts with Change Healthcare out of Nashville, really talking about what they're doing around transparency and financial well-being, education, and engagement. And then following that will be Steve Welburn of Questis. And Steve comes at it from a little different point of view. He's the retirement advisor that now has morphed his company into a technology company to enable consumers to have access to this financial wellness.
Financial wellness.
Right. So,
employee benefit is what they do. So it should be a good show today.
Yeah, it should be. And, you know, that's going to be pretty deep and wide with us at our IHC Forum and Expo that we'll talk about a little later today, coming up May 24th and 26th. But, John, let's talk a little bit about, you know, we're back from Dallas. We had our private exchange forum in Dallas last week, had 400 attendants with us. And to all, any of our sponsors listening right now and our attendees and our speakers, you know, thank you for making this a big success. And to John Young, our conference chair, you know, thank you for your contribution. And Ernie Harris with Maestro and Meg Murphy with Maxwell as part of our advisory board, thank you for all your contributions, you know, to a successful show last week. Jonathan, what were some of your takeaways from Dallas? You know, when you
I mean, it was a great show, a lot of good energy, and we've been, you know, busy collecting feedback over the last 7 to 10 days, and, you know, it's been positive, overwhelmingly positive, I think. We tried, you know, some new things at the request of our audience coming out of West last year, and you know, we debuted our rapid fire innovation demos. You know, that was kind of a new thing for us to put up on a stage all these different innovators and really have them do, you know, a kind of TED style, brief TED style pitch on their innovation. And I think it was well received.
I do too. You know, I think there are things that we all want to improve upon, but I think it was very well received. We also debuted our Friendly Feud, which
A couple debates. You know, we had the brokers get up there, and of course Scott Woods, a known contrarian on private exchanges, and then we also had the exchange leaders battle the emerging players. So we had.
Which I think was a very good discussion about all of them, and very interactive, engaged discussion. I mean, I think that the overall theme, I think, coming out of that event is there's a real heightened wanting on the part of everyone to seek to understand, you know, the various models, what's working, what's not. You know, where can this be a tool for the brokers, you know, to help them with their clients and help them with their practice. You know, employers there are trying to say, okay, should we, shouldn't we? And if we should, you know, what model should we look at?
Yeah, you know, the conversation's definitely evolved over the course of our, you know, 3 private exchange events. You know, a lot of it's, you know, what cost savings can a private exchange promise? And, I mean, kind of a lot of people come to the consensus that, you know, the private exchange needs to be a part of a larger consumerism-focused benefit strategy. And, you know, you can achieve a lot of this without a private exchange, like Scott Wood says, health management, you know, right-sizing benefits by implementing the CDHP with the HSA. So there are different ways to achieve the triple aim, you know, lower costs, better outcomes, et cetera. But private exchange is definitely emerging as one of the ways to do that.
Yeah, and I think to your point too, that came out several times throughout the event, is that, you know, an exchange isn't necessarily a strategy, it's a tool that helps execute, you know, part of the strategy. Agree?
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yeah.
And then looking at the emerging parts of the other, you know, solutions that are part, that go beyond the major medical, you know, the supplemental voluntary. We had some very good discussions there around supplemental and voluntary, and, you know, what should be a part of the mix and what's emerging as part of the mix.
Yeah. I did, you know, going back to the strategy versus the tool kind of, you know, dichotomy that comes up often during these conferences. I mean, I think that the opening session that you led closed really nicely when you spoke about, you know, a private exchange, you know, is a new focus for employee benefits that was, you know, potentially never there before. Mm-hmm. And I think that's especially true when you're seeing people like Fidelity and MassMutual enter the space with, you know, quote-unquote private exchanges that, you know, go beyond maybe what people imagined 3-4 years ago. And now you have a hub that's focused on anything from, you know, wealth management, financial management, employee benefits, well-being, et cetera.
Yep. The marriage of health and wealth really coming together.
Yeah, and I think that adds a lot of value to your employees as a retention tool. And I think that's maybe an area where, you know, a lot of companies are going to find private exchanges work for them.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, and again, in many, many ways, we're down this road, but we're still at the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're beginning what's evolving inside the models, because there's only so much
yeah.
bandwidth the consumer can handle right now. You know, there's only so much bandwidth that an employer and their broker can handle.
Mm-hmm.
But it's evolving. You know, telehealth, you know, when we look not just around exchanges about healthcare consumerism, telehealth is emerging as a very real part of the marriage with,
sure.
you know, high deductibles, et cetera, and telehealth, and you know, see telehealth becoming an important part of an exchange model.
Yeah, and you know, it makes a lot of sense when, you know, the percentage of a total compensation package that, you know, health benefits and all employee benefits, you know, make up, and, you know, changing that from a mobile app, for example, or a web portal that your employees log into, you know, on a regular basis, as opposed to paper-based enrollment that they, you know, check some boxes on in October or November and then forget about the rest of the year. You know, I think that also speaks to the retention aspect that a private exchange can provide.
Yeah, and you're right. The first step is it's got to help you bend the cost curve. How can an exchange as part of a overall strategy, as a tool strategy, help you bend that cost curve? You know, help you, you know, reduce some of your administrative costs and burdens. And then how does it provide a better experience to your employees and their families? And then, to your point, access to a 365, 24/7 benefit portal and
yeah.
education and engagement portal that you come back to access your telehealth, come back to and access your shopping, health shopping,
yeah.
you know, platforms, access, health management, you know, et cetera.
Yeah, and, you know, this all kind of leads into a discussion on millennials, I think, and you know, we're going to have that general session in Atlanta, all focusing on how millennials are changing healthcare and employee benefit. I actually saw an article this week by Jonathan Rickert, who is the founder of Array Health, and he published a short article, but he makes some good points about why private exchanges are just, you know, the natural evolution
mm-hmm.
for delivering employee benefits to millennials and even the generation, the younger generation below millennials. You know, they're digital natives. You know, people in my generation
yep.
grew up with Amazon. And of course, some people like and dislike the comparison of private exchanges to other e-commerce platforms, but I do think it's an okay simile. But yeah, you know, millennials are, he makes the point that they're almost illiterate when it comes to health insurance technology, or terminology, rather.
Yeah.
So, you know, the decision support tools inside a private exchange are going to be crucial.
Oh, very, very important. Very, very important. And I should not go too far without mentioning that John Young, our conference chair, did a very nice tribute to open the event to Ken Sperling, one of the pioneers in the exchange forefront that really made exchanges what they are today. And Ken sadly passed away, you know, last year. So we Ken was with Aon Hewitt. So John did a really nice job there. And anyone who wants to access any of these general sessions and actually see this tribute actually can. The videos will be up, what, Jonathan, about 2 weeks or so on our website?
I think so.
In our IHC University, you can access that by going to theihcc.com and go to the IHC University, and you'll be able to access our videos. So, again, I want to thank everyone who was with us in Dallas. You know, we're hard at work on Atlanta, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program, coming up May 24th to 26th, and then we'll be in Baltimore first week of September at Private Exchange Forum Baltimore that we're pretty excited about and getting a lot of positive feedback on. Mm-hmm. And then our final event of the year will be IHC Forum West out in Las Vegas the day after the election, which should cause some interesting conversations to take place regardless of which way this all goes.
We actually, you know, right now, if you're interested in attending any of those events, you know, we are still in the preliminary stages of planning the program for Baltimore and Las Vegas, but you know, you can register for all three events right now at $99 each. So, theihccforum.com.
Yeah, let me bring our first guest onto the program, and we're pleased to have joining us today Keith Roberts, VP of Engagement with Change Healthcare out of Nashville. Keith, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity, and thanks for your work in the healthcare consumer agenda.
Yeah, thanks, Keith. First, I appreciate that, and nice to have you. Before we kind of jump into financial well-being and talk about, you know, what's emerging there and what you folks are doing, give our audience a backgrounder on Change Healthcare, if you would, please.
Yeah, thanks for that. Recently, we rebranded our diverse organization as Change Healthcare, and today we're over 6,500 people dedicated to solving some of the biggest problems in healthcare through our Intelligent Healthcare Network, which is the single largest financial and administrative healthcare network in the U.S. So collectively, we share a vision of enabling smarter healthcare, and by that we mean improve patient experience, reduce cost of care, and better health outcomes.
Yeah, and Keith, you are responsible for working directly with the TrueView Health Shopping Platform. Can you tell our audience a little bit about that, please?
Absolutely. So the TrueView platform, it really helps consumers realize their, what we're coining, their shopportunity in healthcare consumption.
I like that. So what makes you kind of different from some of the other solutions that are out there in the marketplace?
I think one of the main differences is we are focused on the consumer, on the consumer's behavior, and understand many of the barriers that they encounter in realizing that shopportunity and in optimizing their experience with the healthcare system.
I appreciate that. Well, let's kind of step back a little bit, and I know, you know, what you folks are really passionate about. What you're passionate about is really, you know, helping, you know, consumers, you know, become well, so to speak, around finances, you know, financial well-being. And it is a very hot buzzword right now, and I think it means a lot. So what's the relevance of well-being to healthcare financial planning?
Yeah, thanks for that. That buzzword is so true. I think if you ask 100 people what well-being means, you probably get 100 different definitions. And if you'd permit, I'll share a quick story with you that made it very clear to me. A few years ago, I had the pleasure of serving as a consultant for a behavioral economics consulting firm. And we were in Washington, D.C., and we were working with one of our strategic advisors, Newt Gingrich. And we posed a rather simple question of the speaker of, we want to aim our science at solving some of the world's biggest problems, and left it open-ended. And without hesitation, Speaker Gingrich responded with, you know, that's simple. Unless we prevent healthcare GDP spend in the U.S. To get to 20%, our children aren't going to have or realize the same opportunities that we've had, and then just left it. And that quick and simple response really launched a lot of effort in getting more declarative on what well-being means. And so basically, we set about interviewing a representative sample of 98% of the world's population with a really simple question. What distinguishes your best possible life from a miserable existence? And the outcomes of that were rather significant in terms of defining what well-being really means to people.
What does it mean? What were some of your unique findings around that?
Yeah, thank you. It really boiled down into what we coined the five essential elements, or the five key demands of a life well lived. And this work was published in a bestseller by Tom Rath called Wellbeing, the Five Essential Elements. But in essence, what those five key elements are your career well-being, which is basically when your alarm goes off in the morning, do you wake up with a sense of purpose, something to accomplish? And that's your career well-being. So it applies to students, it applies to volunteers, retirees, and people in the workforce. The second is your social well-being, which is really the quality of relationships in your life. The third is your financial well-being, which we'll focus more on today, obviously. The fourth is what I think a lot of people traditionally think of when they think of well-being, and they conjure up images of wearables and salads and treadmills, and that's your physical well-being, really your energy throughout the day. And last is your community well-being, and how well do you fit with the community in which you live, work, and play. So those are the five key demands of a life well-lived. They're highly interdependent, and look forward to talking a little bit more about the financial component.
Yeah, talk about that. Talk about, you know, what. Let's talk directly about what is the influence of financial well-being on an individual's overall well-being.
Sure. One of the first things we found that surprised us a little bit was the traditional gold standard as people think about financial well-being has been income. Income level equating to high financial well-being. And we were really surprised to find that traditional definition of financial well-being didn't hold up. We found people with very high income levels that were struggling or suffering in their financial well-being. And on the flip, we found people with relatively low levels of income that were thriving in their financial well-being. So it became clear to us that income is probably not the best measure of financial well-being. And as we parsed more of those responses, we found that financial security, or the perception that you have enough money to live your life the way you want to, actually has three times the impact on financial well-being than income alone.
Yeah, well, that's incredibly interesting. And as we move to more healthcare consumerism initiatives, and we pass more shared responsibility on the consumers, you know, there are pretty major implications of overlooking healthcare financial planning as a part of financial well-being. Correct?
Oh, that's it's becoming increasingly profound and important for consumers. I think I've listened to a few of your guests and the context of the importance of the decision, the gravity of the decisions that they're making through enrollment and through their treatment choices have a really strong impact on their household budgets. Even compared to a few years ago, individual consumer financial responsibility for financing their health care is consuming a larger and larger portion of their household budgets. And I don't think people's knowledge or support that they've received has kept up with that increasing demand on their household budget. One of the interesting things that we came across recently is Forbes had shared a study from Harvard University that indicates that medical expense is the biggest cause of personal bankruptcy in the United States, representing about 62% of all filings. And I think as you dig a little bit deeper, it even becomes more interesting in that 78% of those filers had some form of health insurance. So to your point earlier, this cost shifting to consumers we need to better equip consumers to make some very, very important decisions.
Keith, what's changed healthcare? I know you have the TrueView health shopping platform, which can be an anchor for a lot of this, but what else are you doing around a program to really help both health plans and employers, you know, provide better education, better well-being, financial well-being programs to their employees or members of the health plan?
Yeah, thank you. We're increasingly leveraging this intelligent healthcare network that I had mentioned earlier, which is really its service of 750,000 physicians, 105,000 dentists, 60,000 pharmacists, 5,000 hospitals that interact with, all said, 200 million consumers, and that could be through this transparency solution that you mentioned through TrueView, or something as simple as 800 million EOBs, explanations of benefits, that we distribute annually. So because we're able to participate across the continuum of care from enrollment and eligibility all through claim payment, we benefit from the connectivity and data and scale of billions of transactions to be able to observe consumer behavior through an episode of care and begin to intervene in a more timely and relevant fashion, such that we can help people make decisions when they need to make those decisions, as opposed to rely upon consumers to find information at a time that they might not be feeling at their best.
And does that consumer level insight help both health plans and employers improve engagement of their members and employees and families, you know, around these decisions?
Yeah, we pay very close attention to the lift that we receive by being more intentional and honestly applying some of the tools of the trade from retailers on how they better understand consumers and consumer needs and consumer behaviors. I think, you know, historically we have focused on demographic traits of consumers to try and reach and educate and engage. And, you know, the consumer sciences have become very, very refined of late by applying some of these insights through behavioral economics to better understand people's personas, if you will, and the type of information they need, whether it be the mode or message. You know, I think a previous caller had talked about health literacy. You know, traditionally, this industry has used terminology that people don't understand. Only 14% of consumers understand terms like deductible, copay, coinsurance, and then they have to resort to what they know, and that's price. And by resorting to price, they often get surprised and have greater financial responsibility through an episode of care than they might have anticipated when they made the decision.
Keith, if I'm an employer and I'm listening to this program and I want to better understand Change Healthcare, and then we'll talk about how they can contact you, but talk about your business model for an employer and the same thing for health plans. What's your business model for a health plan and or an employer?
Sure. We really like to boil it down to its lowest common denominator, and that's the healthcare member, the consumer. And we can reach those directly through the employer or through their health plan. And you know, the health plans have an increasingly robust set of tools from a decision support perspective to help consumers. And I think consumers are starting to understand the importance. This just came out in the Journal of American Medicine in January. They found that, you know, 70% of consumers believe that out-of-pocket costs matter. They also found that half of consumers would use price info, transparency, you had mentioned TrueView, if it were available. The tragedy is that less than 5% of consumers actually compare cost and realize that shop opportunity. And that's despite the fact that 98% of health plans offer cost calculator tools, that only 2% of patient members use them. So we have a real engagement problem, which starts with awareness. But then we also can get very much more refined in terms of, beyond awareness and education, how do we apply these consumer insights to help people at their decision points?
Yeah, and I think, you know, to your point on what you're doing, and we were talking earlier on the program about it too, is that need to be aware on the level of education that consumers have today and they're going to have tomorrow, and what the decision support solutions like you can do, because I don't think we consumer, and I'll even we're all in this business, but we consumers even want to know every acronym out there, even though we live and breathe it every day. So how do we help them make those intelligent decisions, bring those choices to them, correct, and help them make the choices that they need to make?
Yes, I think about an upcoming guest that you have on your program that'll talk about financial wellness in the workplace. And I also think about, you know, what I've learned by being a registered securities rep. There's a requirement that financial advisors have to have a suitability conversation with their clients. And that suitability conversation really gets a good grasp on tolerance for risk, capacity to assume risk. And I overlay that on the decisions that our colleagues and our friends are forced to make through an episode of care, including enrollment and plans. They don't have that suitability conversation, and they're forced to make now increasingly important decisions about their financial well-being without that support, or at least without the awareness of that support, which does exist and exists through employers, it exists through their health plans, and you know, we are proud to be able to equip some of that decision support, but it's just not being consumed at the degree that it needs to be to help people avoid some of the perils of bad decision making in the consumption and delivery of healthcare.
Yeah, well said, and I think you guys are well positioned to help the market move forward and do that. Listen, Keith, I really time flies here when we're having a good interactive discussion, and I really have enjoyed having you on the program today. We'll have to have you on again. I want to give you an opportunity to kind of leave our audience with some takeaways, if you would, please.
Oh, thank you. I think we can boil it down into three things. You know, the decisions that consumers make in financing their healthcare have an increasingly significant impact on not only their financial well-being, but their overall well-being that we had talked about earlier. Second, I believe that consumers have access to decision support across their continuum of care that they're likely not aware of. You know, as a matter of fact, we see in every market that we examine, there's 3 times pricing variability within a market for similar services. And it's just not something that the typical consumer, if you think about retail products in general, would tolerate. With transparency, they make better decisions on behalf of themselves and their families. And then last, I think a real shopportunity exists for those who engage in this decision support that's made available to them.
Well, Keith, I really appreciate that. If we have listeners out there that want to connect with you, tell them how they can get in contact with you, please.
Absolutely. I think the most efficient way is probably my email address, which is kroberts@changehealthcare.com, or please send an invite through LinkedIn to Keith Roberts.
Keith, great discussion today. Really appreciate you taking some time out of your day to join us, and I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thanks as well, and thanks for your good work.
Yeah, have a nice weekend. Take care.
You too.
Good discussion. I mean, I think, again, we're going to pick it up here in a little bit with, you know, another angle on financial well-being. It just makes a lot of sense, too. I mean, not only the decision support that they're providing through TrueView and the health shopping environment, but then they step back and take a look at how does that really contribute to not only financial well-being, help people do financial well-being, but what is financial well-being's impact on each of our
total
lives,
well-being.
On total well-being. Sure. And again, that this will be, we're going to do a lot of this at forum coming up in Atlanta, right, Jonathan?
That's right. We do have a workshop session planned. Denise Winston, who's been on this program before, I think back in January or February, she's going to be leading a panel of experts on financial wellness, as part of really our kind of overall increased focus on total well-being.
Yeah, total well-being, yeah. And right now, I think you said in an earlier segment, we have Super Saver Rate until when, Jonathan?
That will be a week from today. We actually just announced that we have extended the $99 rate for the Atlanta show. They were set to expire at midnight tonight, but we're going to extend it 1 week. We've had a lot of people registering already this morning. So, 7 more days.
And then go find out at theiaccforum.com. Mm-hmm. Access their website and get updated on the program. And, you know, we're really excited about, you know, the level of employers that are participating with us, including our opening keynote panel led by really five of the leading employers here in, you know, Atlanta, in the greater Atlanta area.
That's right. We have the Atlanta Wellness Professionals. Of course, Chick-fil-A is, you know, representatives from Chick-fil-A are going to be leading that, and they've been very vocal, very active over the years about employee well-being. And then, of course, Chick-fil-A representatives will be joined by Jamie Benton with Rollins.
CDC, right?
CDC is also going to be there. And, you know, we have, I mean, we have employers embedded throughout the program. That's really one of our themes. Margie Rodino, who is, you know, a good friend of ours and a great contributor, she's going to be back doing her workshop on the employer's recipe for success. She's with Sloan Val out of Chicago, and with her will be Jennifer Forster, who leads all HR initiatives with Buffalo Exchange, the clothing boutiques. So nationwide retail. Margie's workforce is more kind of warehouse employees with very long ties, multi-generation ties to the company. We have Margaret at the Midwest Business Group on Health, who's going to be leading the closing employer panel.
And bringing in some of her members from...
Yeah, she has some... Of course, they have some really big names, Larry and Margaret, and the work that they do... you know, they do a fantastic job, and we already have David Hines, who's at Metro Nashville Public Schools. So, you know, I think they have something like 3,000 employees. Just throughout the program, we have, you know, some great employers that are coming to talk about on-site clinics, to talk about wellness, you know.
Talk about supplemental, voluntary, all of that, all of the above. Yeah, so, you know, hopefully you can join us in Atlanta. We'll have 1,000-plus attendees with us. So this is our biggest event in Atlanta, May 24th through 26th at the Cobb Waverly and the Cobb Galleria. You know, you can look out your window and see the new baseball stadium that's to come.
That's right.
Be done next summer. And now I'd like to bring in our next guest on the program, Steve Welburn, the CEO of Questis out of Charleston, South Carolina. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys today?
We're great. Nice to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, I see I've got another Ohio-educated caller on the phone today. You're Bowling Green grad, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, I'm a Buckeye. We won't get into that. We'll save that for another time, though. So, but nice to have you here. You know, you're doing some really unique things over there at Questis, and you know, let's open up by giving our audience a little background on what you guys are doing and your unique footprint around this financial wellness space.
Yeah, our perspective really starts with when we started Questis. I was originally and have been in the investment advisory space for many, many years, and I served primarily what I would kind of consider the middle tier millionaire client or the mass affluent client, primarily from the perspective of managing money and or managing assets with inside their retirement plan. And so a few years ago, really as we began to see the financial services industry changing as a whole, specifically the investment advisory space, we felt like we had an opportunity to better serve our customers or our clients through technology and also to scale our business. Unexpectedly, it was through the process of exploring technology for our investment advisory firm that mm-hmm. we kind of stumbled upon this gap between the traditional retirement DC plans and the employer. And it was this idea that I kind of always said when I would go into a company, especially a lot of small businesses, you know, employers, especially the HR departments, don't necessarily have huge resources and or, you know, the smaller the company, the less that HR's capability HR team's capability might be. And so when it came to providing retirement benefits, it was oftentimes that they were kind of misguided, misinformed, and lacked, I thought, the tools and kind of the knowledge to provide the optimal retirement benefit for their people. And then likewise, when you looked at the employees themselves, I found it always interesting that we have all these statistics flowing around in the marketplace, like 76% of Americans living paycheck to paycheck, yet we expected an employee to be able to focus years ahead on, you know, solving their personal, you know, lifetime income equation. And so I always felt like there was this huge gap, and if anything, it was a little bit the blind leading the blind, where there just was this disconnect. And as we started really exploring technology, we saw the opportunity to actually provide a service for employees regardless of where they were on their financial journey. And it was at that point we started communicating with companies, talking with HR directors, talking with CFOs, and really looking as to what's in the market relative to financial wellness and what were companies doing to kind of make sure that their people were better off than just having access to a retirement benefit. And as we got into that a few years ago, it was really alarming to us because there were so many of these companies that we were hearing the same message, which is our people need help. HR directors were saying that they were frustrated because people would come to them with personal financial questions and they didn't feel comfortable answering those questions, whether it was for a liability reason or just a plain knowledge. And they were also very sensitive to the idea that when a personal financial question came up in the workplace, that it oftentimes led to uncomfortable conversations about payroll or advances against payroll or retirement plan loans or hardship withdrawals or any of these different things. And or even in some cases, it would lead to conversations about more compensation or raises. And those were conversations that HR directors didn't really want to have because in a lot of cases, they don't have the control to make that decision. On the other hand, we found that CFOs were really starting to say, hey, what's a financially sick employee do to our bottom line? How does it hurt our company? If they come to work and they're struggling with money, are they really the most productive employee that we could have? And so as we really began to kind of pull this information together, we knew that there was an opportunity to maybe fill in a gap that had never been addressed. But we knew that as, you know, from an old advisory kind of world, we knew that the only way that you could really do it was with technology and software and the ability to kind of scale the advisor and scale advice. And so that's kind of where Quest has started. And now we have a pretty robust financial wellness platform. We would like to think that we're on track to being the most holistic and automated financial wellness solution in the marketplace. And we're now working both directly with employers through their HR departments and benefits, as well as partnering with some fairly large financial institutions who are also starting to kind of recognize that the future of financial advice may come through financial wellness.
Yeah, because you've got, and it's all complicated by the convergence of health and wealth, correct? I mean, we've got now with healthcare consumerism, you know, in full force and the consumerization of benefits, we have, the consumer, the employee consumer, faced with increased shared responsibility in making the right healthcare cost and response for that cost. Just a whole new dynamic.
I think healthcare is obviously probably the greatest concern for the future, not only from the employer's perspective, but also from the employee's perspective. The amount of cost in the direction of where healthcare has gone, I think that's the area that is the great unknown for a lot of people. And then I think if you start adding into that equation that more and more companies, as a way of kind of managing their healthcare costs, are going to even different types of employment models like Uber, where you've got these contracted workforces versus right. employed workforces, it even raises a bigger question, which is how does a subcontractor or a contracted employee, how do they manage those costs themselves when all of that burden now, you know, falls in their plate versus, you know, having the assistance of an employer-sponsored plan. So yeah, I think healthcare is one of the biggest issues that people have to begin to manage. And if people are not financially well off, or if they're struggling with their personal finances, all we're really doing is creating more and more people who may be ultimately underinsured or ill prepared for, you know, one of those healthcare events.
Right, and then also, and this can be a positive, it can also be a major concern if not done right, but we've now got employee consumers with an HSA. What do I do with that? I've got a 401k on my right hand, on the left hand I got an HSA. What should I do with both of these? You know?
Yeah, that's been one of the biggest surprises for us as we get into organizations and really start working with them, is our experience so far is that employers are, in more cases than not, employers are extremely generous, and they provide an awful lot of benefits to their employees. And that's from retirement benefits to health benefits to savings benefits. But it's amazing to us when we go into a company how many employees, because of a lack of kind of knowledge, don't take advantage of things like flexible savings accounts or HSAs. And it's just a lack of understanding of what the product
yep.
is. And,
yep.
and while the professionals that you know sell those products or sell those plans into the employers are oftentimes to be the responsible party for educating those employees, that's part of the breakdown of the system. If I'm an advisor or if I'm an insurance salesperson or broker or something, and I go into a company with 1,000 employees, it's next to impossible for me to be able to personally reach all those employees. So even if that employer is very efficient at distributing information to their people, the chances are that, you know, when it comes to money, people are very quiet. It's that topic that no one ever wants to talk about. So
right.
it's very difficult in a group of, say, 100 or 200 people for someone to raise their hand and say, I don't understand what you're talking about. And so I think a lot of people go quiet. They don't ask their questions. And as a result, they end up kind of sticking their head in the sand and not taking advantage of what the employer offers. That's one of the things our platform solves, is we make those money conversations easy to have between an employee and through the Questa system. And so instead of those things having to happen at the employer level, the employer now has a tool that can take those questions off their plate. While we do not sell health plans and we don't sell FSAs and HSAs and so forth, we certainly can be a huge ally for the people who do, because we're promoting that the best tier of advice starts with the products that the employer is offering in their benefits package.
Have you, Steve, approached some of the leading HSA players about potential partnerships with them?
Yeah, I'm not gonna mention any names, but we are talking to some very large HSA administrators at this point.
And, yeah, makes sense.
And we think that and again, this is kind of, I think, where the industry as a whole is going, is that whether it's the retirement benefits and service providers or the HSA service providers, I believe everyone is starting to acknowledge that we need more holistic financial wellness in the workplace. And so we're finding that there's opportunities throughout those different service providers for us to, you know, to be a partner and or a potential solution.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. How about the the traditional benefit advisor broker that you alluded to, are you approaching them at all to, as a position yourself as a good tool for they to use with their employer clients?
We have not. We have explored it, but we have not yet reached in any sort of relationship with some of the bigger benefits brokers. We do think there's the possibility of a relationship there. It's just not something that we've had had the opportunity to do yet. We would love to go down that path at some point.
Yeah. I'd be happy to talk to you about that at the right time. Hey, if I'm an employer listening right now, and what's the business model for me? If I've got 1,000 employees and I want to put this in place, just give me the typical business model. What am I looking at?
Our typical business model is that we work directly with the employer. The cost of the product varies based on the size of the organization. It typically ends up being a per employee per month charge. And again, it really varies again, depending on size of the company. We typically find that it's very competitive with some of the other voluntary benefits that they may offer within their organization, and usually works out to be somewhere in the $5 to $10 per employee per month range. But again, okay, it depends a little bit on the size of the organization, and then it also depends on some of the features of what that organization may want. We do a lot of what we do through a virtual interface. But we also offer some additional on-site support and education if it fits within that employer's kind of culture. So again, it's somewhat customizable, but it usually falls in that kind of direction. The employees all get access to their own kind of user interface. The employer also gets access to their own dashboard and their interface, where they can manage the benefit, they can manage the eligible employees on the benefit, and in addition to that, we are building out further and further kind of analytics for the employer, so that we can begin to kind of we don't share any personal financial information with the employer. We think it's extremely important that that information remain confidential to the employee themselves. But we do aggregate data across the entire employer so that we can begin to show trends or show areas where we think the employer may want to provide additional education or even potentially insights on things that they may do to improve upon their compensation and benefits packages for their employees.
Well, Steve, listen, I've enjoyed having you on the program today, and I look forward to us continuing this discussion sometime in the near future. I'd like to give you a chance to kind of recap and leave our audience with some takeaways, if you would, please.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is I think that, the financial industry is changing. I think that for a long, long time, we've seen a financial services market that was glad to work with kind of the upper tier of the market, people that had already reached a point where they had margin and the ability to invest their assets and buy financial products. And that's left a large portion of the American workforce underserved. And we think Questis is a product that not only provides great value to the employees, but we think it provides great value to the employer. And if anybody wants to learn more about us, they can find us at myquestis.com. And if they ever want to email me personally, my email is steve@myquestis.com.
Thank you, Steve, so much. Listen, you have a great weekend over there in Charleston. I look forward to talking to you again real soon.
Thank you very much, guys. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Steve. Take care. Good stuff.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Steve. Yeah, really good stuff, what they're doing. I think it's interesting because you have, we had Change Healthcare coming at it from more of the traditional healthcare side and seeing financial well-being. Here, Steve's coming at it from a retirement financial advisor standpoint. And, in the middle here is the incredible importance of, financial wellness and financial, well-being. I mean, it's a very legitimate part of, an integrated health management strategy,
Absolutely.
A benefit package, you know, for employees and their families. So, again, thank you to my guests for being on today. Thank you for our listeners today. Just a reminder for Jonathan Seedmack that over the next week, you can still get Super Saver rates for all our events, actually, but specifically for May. It ends next Friday at theihccforum.com, where you can check out Atlanta, Baltimore, and Las Vegas. And we will see you next week on Healthcare Consumerism Radio.